Turn the goddamn light on. Hello. Hello. Hi. How are we? Dear listener, season 8, episode 2, Little Nick and Dan cast. Little Nick and Dan cast for you.
Little Nick and Dan. Misa, love you.
Chosen by none other than that voice you hear.
Jar Jar Binks.
Daniel.
Jar Jar DeFranco is how I would like to be referred to for Alan.
DeFranky, oh, which is amazing because my introductions are
Jar Jar DeFranks.
They're kind of mythical creatures, which Jar Jar Binks has now become something of myth, I would say.
I think he's come back around. I think people are actually for Jar Jar now.
That's insane, given that it seemed to be the one thing the world united in opposition to.
Yeah.
At the time of his release.
We've come around.
Upon the world. I don't know if that's coming around, dude. I don't know.
It's starting here.
I don't know if that's a positive thing.
I'm starting a movement, Nick.
Oh, my God. Well, you've already done it, but say hello to everybody. This is Daniel.
Hello, everybody. Jar Jar Binks.
Daniel?
Hero of the Empire.
God. Wow. Yeah, we could go on for a long time about that guy. But what we have for you today, dear listeners, is quite a collection. I'm really pumped. Daniel has put together quite a fine show because he's a fine young cannibal. Mm-hmm. And we are looking at Infinite Possibilities Outside the Screen by Josh Denslow, published in Short Story Long. We are also going to be talking about the one and only Billy Joel, hence my intro, his brand new single "Turn the Lights Back On," what is that bevy you got going on there, Dana?
Oh, my friend, this is the Victory Tasty Cake collab. It is their coffee cake ale.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I was gonna give you one, but
oh gosh,
I haven't seen you in person. Couldn't mail this one. Couldn't get the media mail to cover a bottle of beer.
No, and you shouldn't do anything beyond media mail. Please, everyone, take that to heart, what I've just said. Don't ever go beyond media. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I was put away. I just emerged today. That stomach virus that's been going around the Philadelphia area.
Oh, yeah, you had that norovirus. That is pummeling.
Crushed me,
the
dude.
Landscape up here in the Northeast.
Crushed your buddy. I got out of bed. You know, it was one of those ones. I'll put it, not to be graphic, but I'll put it this way: 1:45 in the a.m. I know the time to the minute because I found myself at full attention, soldier-like, next to my bed, looking at my clock. And then realizing the next three things I had to do were use the bathroom, throw away some garments, and take a shower.
You know, there's an easy fix to stop this in its tracks. Just wash the shit off your hands.
I don't know why people have such trouble doing that. I can't tell you how many times I've been in the men's room and another gentleman has used the urinal and I haven't heard the sink. And I've heard the door close.
Yeah, it's gross.
It's like, what's wrong with you? But we went through a pandemic. Like, that's the thing that makes me upset the most, I think. Mm-hmm. Is not the shitting your pants. It's that we went through a pandemic. Like, how did we not learn? You know? It's bananas. In any case, that's frustrating. I am going to move us in to the discussion. Dug this quite a bit. I drew some immediate connections and parallels among these things, which I was very pleased. I was like, "Oh, Daniel, nicely done!" Oh, Daniel,
I was about
to sing another piano guy's hit. But here's the thing: if I were to introduce you, a centaur plays a role in this story, and so I thought, "Oh, if I were to introduce my dear friend as a mythical creature, what would I choose?" And I chose the puka, which is a Irish mythological creature. I mean, it, you know, the Isles is where you find it most, but Ireland is the main spot. And I know you have an affinity for Ireland. It comes from Irish mythology. It is a changeling creature. Mm-hmm. It is one who typically centaur-esque. I mean, it can take on a number of different shapes. It can take on human form, but when it does, it often has real dark black hair because the main form it takes on is this black horse with golden eyes. Mm-hmm. And so we have a little bit of that paralleling. But it's interesting because it'll give advice to lead humans away from harm, but it also sort of delights in confusing and terrifying humans as well.
That sounds exactly like my pedagogy.
it's pretty much, I was like, how does Daniel teach? And it's benevolent, but it's also like mischievous. So I was like, this just fit really, really well. I'd never heard of it before, but when I was doing a little bit of research, I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. And they're known for good or bad luck, stuff like that. So I don't know. Thought it was pretty fitting.
Hit that out of the park, my friend.
Thanks, man.
If I had to introduce you as a mythological creature, I think you would be, fuck, this is tough, a narwhal.
Nice.
All right.
I dig it.
Because
unicorn-esque, unicorn adjacent.
Yeah. Because it's the only one I could think of right in this moment.
Awesome. Yeah, it's actually a big tooth, you know?
Wait, does it have a big tooth?
That's what the horn is. The horn is actually a tooth that grows like through its frontal lobe and skull, I guess. Yeah.
Wait, aren't narwhals real, though?
Narwhals are real. They're not mythological. But the reason that they are sort of like put in that unicorn type realm is because they have the horn, which is really a tooth. But people used to think that they were magical when they started exploring Antarctica, and they would cut the horn and bring it back and reduce it to powder and say it had like magical properties and all this other stuff.
That's why I picked it for you, because when you were a city boy, you were full of life and you were vivacious, even. But then you moved to the suburbs, and you got reduced to dust. I think that's
ground down.
Yeah,
and the magic was gone. The magic was said to be there was lost forever.
Yeah, I'm like, hey Nick, you want to come out tonight? Like, gotta check with headquarters first.
Oh God. Do you imagine if I use that?
Yeah.
I've heard people say that. Oh God, that's such a terrible.
I shouldn't say I'm actually the one that's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
At 8:30 on a Friday?
In my own neighborhood? Oh, buddy.
It's gonna be rough. It's gonna be,
it's
rough.
Gonna be tough.
It's gonna be tough.
Well, I know everybody there? Probably. Oh no. Nice. I appreciate it. I like it. I have to tell you a joke at the end of this that Tom Bannon said about narwhals. It's fucking hilarious, but it's so inappropriate.
But first, before we get into the story,
hot goss.
Hot goss.
Hot goss.
Hot goss.
What's the hot goss?
Hot goss. Okay.
You got some goss? You got,
I do. I've
got
a little bit of goss. A little bit of goss.
Nice.
All right. Here is, I'm going to record a stinger for that. We got to have something there.
I know, yeah.
So this is some literary, it's no longer hot goss. This is maybe more tepid. It's
okay.
Maybe stale goss at this point. I think it was back in the beginning of January.
Bathwater goss?
Beginning of January.
That's not too far.
Yeah, but it's not hot, you know?
No, it's not hot.
So there was a literary journal, we'll call them out, Blood Pudding.
Ooh.
I discovered them last year. And I
submitted to them.
So have I. I discovered maybe a year and a half ago, and I kind of liked the couple of things that I read.
Same.
So I instantly like went through my folders, and I was like, okay, this is for them.
This is pudding-esque.
Yeah. And I sent two things over the course of a year. Here's the fucked up thing. Okay, so this part's not fucked. They charge to submit.
Right.
There's no free submissions. That's mildly fucked up.
I sent something in for an anthology, so I like was like okay with it.
Yeah, but it's like a few bucks, right?
Yeah. It's three.
I'm not crying over $3 or $5, whatever, right?
Right. Adds up though.
But here's where this is the gossip, and this is why fuck them. They sent out a mass email to everybody that's ever submitted. You probably got the email. Maybe it went to your spam.
Probably.
Saying, hey, submissions have fallen off. We'd love it if you could send us, you know, your best work. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I kind of dig the journal. Maybe they're reaching out to me.
Right. Oh, yeah. A little bit of an ego stroke.
Just a touch. But I think we all kind of feel this way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would have been like, ooh.
So I follow the links, and I'm like, I don't know. I got to pay again. You rejected me twice already.
Yeah, and so then you wanted me? Like, you reached out to me?
Yeah, I held off. And I'm not on Twitter much, but on my Slack channel for Smoke Lung, some people were talking about it because they were getting the same email. So I go to Twitter and I check.
Okay, you got the inside.
And it was kind of like people were, like, dragging them, subtweeting, like, fuck them, you know?
Oh, brutal.
Right, I don't even know what happened. I don't know like what's going on with that, but that's kind of a bad move, right? Just in general.
Yeah, I don't.
If submissions have fallen off that bad, where you're mass emailing everybody, like
that's a crazy move, actually.
Yeah,
that sounds nuts to
that
me.
That sounds like give us your money.
Yeah, like let's get we need a huge hit right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. And that is such a, I mean, writers would do it because they would have that. Thank God for some of these like communities where you can get the inside and go, oh no, we all got that. Mm-hmm. You're not special. You know, we unfortunately need to be reminded that just as much as we need a little validation from time to time.
No, tons of people probably submitted and they probably made a few $100 and rejected those stories as well.
I mean, like outright, they probably, you know what I mean? Yeah. Didn't even, wow. Then maybe that was, imagine if that was like a culling thing where they're like, any asshole that submits this, we don't want, like from this email, we don't want.
Yeah.
And the people that don't, we're going to actually reach out. Imagine if another email came out to just like a select group of people.
Yo, I thought that was the one for me, you know?
You thought that, yeah. Wow.
How would you
know? I'll have to look.
How would
you know? How would you know? Unless, as you said, little community.
Oh, so here's the doubly fucked up thing is that the email was like a response to a story that they had already rejected.
Oh.
So you get like, I save all of those emails in like my like lit journal.
Yeah, I have a rejection folder.
So it's like title of the story, blood pudding, whatever.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, well, this is weird, right? So like you not only get the rejection back, then you get them like asking for you.
Remember when we hurt you?
Yeah.
We're going to do it, but more cleverly.
Yeah.
Oh,
that is this.
Oh,
it's
hot goss.
Hot goss.
That was some pretty. I think that's hot goss, dude.
Okay.
Especially when it's gonna be real hot when I look in my spam folder this evening and it's there.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Oh god. That's gonna be so crushing if it's a re. I love the re.
I love seeing the re.
I love the re. That's one of my favorite things.
I know
when I see the re. Oh.
I know I'm getting my heart broken every time I open it.
Yeah.
But boy, do I love it.
The chances are slim, but boy, do I love it.
Oh,
I know.
It's like you just walked into the casino and you went 50 on
black. Different. Today's different.
The marble. It just drops and you know. fuck red again. How can it be red?
Fucking
every time?
Red. Why was it green? Jesus. Yeah. Oh, man. I love it so much. It's the best. And then immediately the worst. All right, so let's talk about something that I thought was damn close to the best. This was very cool.
Right, so can I talk about this just for a moment?
Oh, please, yeah.
So this came across my feed. Josh Denslow, he also reads for Smoke Lung. So
I saw that, yeah.
We're friendly on the social medias. I think
he's been doing that for like a decade, right?
He's been there forever, yeah.
He's got your numbers, yeah.
No, I haven't been there that long. Maybe about 4 years, maybe.
Oh, okay.
They wanted me for about a decade. Let me tell you that. But I said, I'm too busy, baby.
Send me that re.
Yeah. So this came across the old feed, checked it out, and I instantly was like, this is the best short story that I've read in a long time.
Nice.
And I think it just more indicative of my own connection to this story, as opposed to, you know, like, hey, for everybody, this is probably not the best for everybody, but it's a mighty fine. It's a really good fucking story.
It is.
Then it turns out, and this, I guess, is on purpose, but not intentional. Our last month's cast was from Hobart, which was run by Aaron Birch.
Correct.
This is out on A Short Story Long, which is a Substack run by Aaron Birch.
By Aaron Birch, yeah. I know, I saw that. I was like, I was like the first thing I saw, and I was like, if Daniel's just being real fucking lazy right now, I'm going to be so goddamn mad.
No, it's
and
a
then
good
I,
fucking story.
I read it, and I was like, oh, it's a wonderful story. And then I read the dude's bio, and I was like, oh, I bet he fucking knows him from Smoke Long, and all this fucking came together in a beautiful way. Yeah, I agree. I think it is it's not for everybody. Mm-mm. I don't think everybody's going to identify with it in the way that I did and perhaps you did. And I think one of the things that really stuck out to me is, like, it's a—
let's give a summary, yeah?
Yeah. It's about a man who has recently become unemployed. Is living with his girlfriend, who has been found to have this super attractive coworker. Mm-hmm. And then in this sort of like intermediary time that he finds himself in, he is moved to do things that he wouldn't otherwise do. And this conflict comes to a head, and we're left sort of to figure out—
yeah, so
what movie makes at the end?
She's working from home on Zoom, right?
Correct.
Right, and so our main characters see— did we get his name?
Yeah, I mean, it's a first person, so you're just like in it, and I don't think she ever says his name.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we both don't know it, which means that it wasn't in the story. Okay, that's two of us, right? If two of us can't remember, it didn't exist,
man.
Right?
All right. It couldn't have, especially casters of this caliber.
So he checks this dude out on the Zoom, and he, like you said, he's handsome. People shouldn't be this handsome.
I mean, that's the coworkers are talking about it. She's talking about it.
Yeah,
it's vastly.
And she's
apparent.
Giggling. She adopts like a different voice, a different airs about her when she's on these meetings with this guy. And it turns out the motherfucker's a centaur.
This is what she supposes. No one actually knows. This is one of the important things. No one actually knows if he's a centaur. It's just supposed because they've never seen him from the chest down.
Yeah.
And anybody that looks like that has to be a mythical creature, I think, is the consensus of the coworkers, mostly female.
Yeah, I read this as he was definitely a centaur.
I think that's what we're meant to believe, but I think we're also in a very unreliable narrator's mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so like, I think... I mean, she does say it with some conviction and finality when she initially said, because he's taken aback when she initially says, some of them have been saying that they think he's a centaur. And he's like,
yeah, there are infinite possibilities of what's going outside his camera view until someone sees him. He could also have the body of a koala bear or an egret.
And then she goes, those aren't real.
Yeah, those things aren't real.
Which was that was awesome. I was a big fan of everything. I think he left just enough on the table and just enough off throughout the entirety of the thing. Like the whole story, I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. I didn't know really ever who to fully trust or side with.
Yeah.
I thought between him and the girlfriend, I was not too sure about that. I thought that was awesome. One of the things that I wanted to talk about is what happens to us when we have this hit to our self-esteem, because I thought that
nothing
was
good.
At the center of this. Yeah, dude. And I was more so interested in if this was a human thing or a dude thing,
it's
because
a dude
every
thing.
Every time I've seen this play out in fiction or, even memoir or documentary or fucking film, it's always a dude mm-hmm. who's acting this way. And so some of the things that he finds himself engaging in are like he goes into her computer, and I'm not sure, other than like you said, sort of this like putting on an air, but like everybody does that. Mm-hmm. There's like a work voice, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was really, really fascinating to me how he kind of nailed that. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, yeah, like this idea that like we give in to our sort of most paranoid and base instincts when our self-esteem takes that hit. And yeah. And what the fuck is that about?
So our narrator, he loses his job.
He's not a centaur.
He's not a centaur.
Does not have a centaur dick by any stretch.
No.
He's checking on that regularly.
Every day. He checks the bathroom just to make sure. Did it grow? Did not.
He's missing out on sexy time.
Absolutely.
Because he's looking at his own penis mm-hmm. in the bathroom and feeling very self-conscious.
Yeah, okay, so this story is male insecurity 101. You know, this is...
Yes.
I feel like I'm a pretty well-balanced dude. I don't act on things anymore. I don't think I ever really acted on them before, though, either. But the feelings, I mean, in the way that this guy does, is what I mean.
The thought, yeah, the thought that crosses the mind, the like...
Yeah, like breaking into a computer and then like tracking this person down. Like that's yeah. that's nutso behavior.
Yep.
But
also confronting the other guys with the same name.
Yeah.
Just to say, you're no hoof.
we'll get to that. All of his actions are just a reflection of how he feels about himself. He feels unworthy,
absolutely.
Right? He loses mm-hmm. his job. He brings his girlfriend sushi. So, oh, good. How do I please this woman, right? He's definitely yeah. what like dickheads would call a beta. Right?
Sure.
He's
very, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's very subservient to her. Like, what is it? What's the better term for that?
I think doting a little bit. You know, like he's
a simp.
Well, yeah, if you're going to be using, yeah, for sure. If you're going
to
be using that
kind
of stuff, but I think he's overcompensating.
Across the aisle here. We need to get more listeners.
We don't want those guys.
Okay, fair enough.
I think that is not an olive branch. Yeah.
So he's pathetic.
I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say that he's pathetic, because I think he's trying to overcompensate mm-hmm. and almost mend something that doesn't need mending. She doesn't give any real indication that anything's broken or needs mending. It's completely in his head, and as you said, it's a manifestation of his own insecurity.
Yeah.
And so that is the thing that really struck me, because that behavior is what then creates a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and had you just been able to like hang tough or rally, you know, or something like that. And I realize these are fucking almost toxic terms at this point, probably. But like that kind of thinking would have done him better than sort of, I mean, it's a little bit of, yeah, I guess kind of pathetic. There's a little bit more cowering than there is. He's basically like, once I do this thing, then I'll start doing the thing that's actually going to help.
Yeah.
And it's almost like once I break mm-hmm. this and ruin shit, then I'll start doing better.
Yeah, there's that dumb dude thing of the grand gesture.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, just like pay attention to the person that you love, that you say that you love.
Right,
like you're trying to own her, and that's not the way, you know.
No, especially when it's like said to him directly, like, you have gotten me sushi from my favorite restaurant 5 nights in a row. Why not my second favorite? And more importantly, why don't you know what that is?
Yeah,
and that I thought was a pretty. I mean, she's pretty funny too. She seems way cooler than him.
Oh,
and I think that was also really well done, because you're like, oh, but that's why I'm saying I didn't know who to trust, because she's definitely cooler than him. She seems like she could probably snag the centaur, but she chose to be with him. What qualities But that's the thing that's missing, mm-hmm. is we never get to see the qualities that he must possess to have her in the first place.
Yeah,
right? That she
together.
Was attracted to, right? Yeah. And we know all about why he's attracted to her. She had this laugh that attracted him, mm-hmm. initially. And obviously we see, I mean, she's clearly funny. She seems to have good taste. She seems to be successful and doing all this stuff that's attractive, have confidence. And he just seems to be the antithesis of that in this moment of his life. And because I'm trying to give him some credit, but that is one thing where I was like, what is it that she was initially attracted to? I mean, he's well spoken. Mm-hmm. I think that was clear. Maybe there's some education there. He does. And I was falling down this rabbit hole a little bit, which I didn't want to, but in the back of my mind, I was like, ooh, maybe he's rich because he got an inheritance from his father. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I hope that's not the thing, because then she's way less cool in my eyes and he just sucks enormously.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that wasn't the case. But in any case, I did want to see. I was trying to figure out, like, why was she with him in the first place? We're seeing him in a bad way.
Yeah, we never really see that, right? Which is good, though.
No.
I love that that's off the page. Because this isn't...
Yeah, it's for us to figure out.
This isn't about his past life. This is about him moving forward, right? We know.
Yeah,
that,
how do you get through this?
We know that he has, like, a ring, you know, and that he bought after they were dating for a couple of weeks. He knew, like,
yeah,
this is my girl. This is the person for me.
What's held him up from that, though? Because that was the other rabbit hole I fell down, was sometimes this kind of thing is projection, mm-hmm. as well. But we don't ever get an indication that he's attracted to somebody else or has these feelings of leaving or anything like that. But, like, what's prevented you, if you felt that strongly, from doing this? Is this self-worth kind of thing always in the front of your mind? Is this always something that's tripping you up, that's snagging you and keeping you? I don't know. Like, are you afraid to do something? I mean, because that's a grand gesture.
Yeah. Here's what he's afraid of. The commitment to her, like, fully. Because we're on page 2 of the story, or, you know, whatever, 5-7 paragraphs down. And he already talks about marrying her, right?
Yeah.
And he goes into her computer for the possibility to skip future heartbreak. I'm going to read here, okay?
Yeah.
He's hacking into her computer. I've never once invaded her privacy, but what if this is the moment where I could skip future heartbreak? Like, here I am hoping to marry her one day, but maybe she's already moving on.
Yeah.
Insecurity. You know, he
screams.
Am I going to settle down? Is this the person that's actually right for me? Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give him a little bit of, I don't want to say credit, but like real humanity. He's not just a weird kind of creepy dude. Right. It's the insecurity. I remember when I was ready to propose to my wife, there weren't like thoughts of like, oh, is she the right one? I've already made that decision, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
But you're still fucking nervous.
Oh, yeah. It's terrifying. Yeah. To say that you're gonna, there is sort of like a freeing thing, though, too, that I think about with that is like, if something, you know, if that heartbreak does happen, at least I was all in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because then the regret there of having not done all that you could or been as transparent it sucks to have any sort of, and I think that's one of the big things here that I took away was like, it's very, very clear that he's still pretty guarded. Like, why not just say what he's thinking, you know what I mean? Like, it'll make for an uncomfortable conversation. Maybe he's going to be laughed at. Maybe she's going to see how insecure he is. Maybe that's not what he wants. But
no, he
there's
definitely
a thing,
doesn't want that.
No, yeah, yeah, obviously. But there's a thing to be said about just being totally, you know, exposed and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's pretty attractive as well. And that's the only way you really, I mean, get to know somebody, you know, is if you have those moments with them and they're really scary. And I feel like they're more, that is more scary and arguably more productive than anything he does. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't have a story if he did that, of course. Yeah. But I think that was where I always end up with these like forgetting Sarah Marshall's in this story. And I just watched another one recently. It was, in any case,
anyway, this,
Shortcomings. It was called Shortcomings. That's what it was. Same thing. Same sort of thing. It's the same dude. The same dude is in Shortcomings. It's the same dude in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's the same dude in this story. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is with this guy, I don't have a sense of like what he wants to do or who he was before this. I don't think we need to know the latter, but I would have liked to have seen the former, because that would have given me a clue about the latter.
Yeah.
And also given me some sense of like direction and why this is happening. And I don't know, sometimes it feels like there are people that just don't have a thing. They don't have something that they want to do. There was no dream. There was no big idea. There was, I'm going to attach myself to this person. And that's where I kind of landed, was like, maybe that was his thing. Was he this woman? Cause think about all his moves, right? He's attracted to her laugh. Mm-hmm. That was what got him. He somehow gets her, which I would love to know, you know, and then a few weeks in, he buys the ring. And so it seems like his identity is completely formed around being with this person, mm-hmm. who is objectively cool. I think like when he says to her, something like, do you want to do the sex later or something like that? Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, please don't say it. Yeah. Like you're marking off something on a medical form.
Yeah. Don't ask. Like,
and
that's,
if we get to that point, which, you know, they're obviously not as old as you or I, but like sometimes you just gotta ask, but, are we going to do this? And that? But like her response later, you know, if you're into fucking my brains out, you can do that.
Yeah, I know that, because that's great. That's later on, right?
That's where I was like, oh, she's funny.
Even after he fails so much with the food, like,
yeah.
Again, okay, well, yeah. I got a new roll tonight. It's like,
yeah.
All right, well, you can fuck my brains out later on. And then instead of being like,
sweet,
like, yes, okay, she actually.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not
even though I'm
like, why can't
up.
You shake yourself for this?
Yeah, he doesn't like accept that. Cool, this is, we are together. She actually likes me. He nods. Even I'm reading. I nod. Even as my disappointing penis sends me messages that he can't possibly reach her brains.
It's so good. I love that. Yeah.
All this dude needed to do was go to WikiHow and look up two things: how to find out if my girlfriend is cheating on me with a centaur, and two, how do I get my head out of my ass?
Right.
Like,
I think the latter was really all he needed. I didn't get any sense that she was doing anything.
I don't want to give away here, but there's some great work Denslow does here with the unreliableness, where I love just to go all in, and Bradley Hoof is absolutely a centaur.
Oh yeah.
Because
yeah, yeah,
I think
yeah.
that if he isn't, if he's just a handsome dude, Denslow made a choice to make him a mythological creature, and I think it's smart, because if it was just a dude, this isn't a very good story. Right? It's just it's just a dude jealous of another dude, and it's a little like cringy bro, you know?
I was thinking he's a mythological creature because the cheating is myth. It's fantasy. It's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The this dude that he, and all that he's sort of like placed upon him, is all made up in his own head. It's all fantasy.
It's the infinite
right?
possibilities of
exactly. And that
you can make up.
Yes. And it might as well be a fucking centaur.
Might as well be.
Yeah, and I really love that, because I was like, oh man, that speaks to that thing that we're talking about, where when you get that hit, your mind just mm-hmm. goes into all these places. And so, yeah, I wasn't I see where you're coming from. I totally get it.
Because it feels just
but
like
I wasn't going to be disappointed if I'm glad that he doesn't. I'm glad. I'll say this, that he ends it where he ends it.
Yeah.
Because then it makes a lot of sense to me, and I think that more importantly, you're left to ponder the possibility of if you, the reader, want him to be a centaur, need him to be a centaur or not, and then what that means to you. And I thought that was really well done. That I mean, I love that the gate is double wide and all that.
How can you compete with a centaur?
Right. How can you compete with the fantasy of your mind?
Yeah.
You can't.
You can't. This is
what you invent in your head will never, ever, ever be close to the reality of the situation.
No, his madness just unravels.
Yeah.
And it's
and because it's behind, and I think this is another thing that's pretty genius is the title. Mm-hmm. Talking about you and your titles. When you get back to the title, and the title involves the word screen,
yeah.
Right? Infinite possibilities outside the screen. What has the screen done to us?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The screen has created the very unfortunate and real possibility that one in a zillion times it is a centaur.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we think we're the fucking main character where it's the centaur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, feeding this inherent thing that would go away a lot faster and we'd be more vulnerable a lot quicker if we didn't have some sort of just even ultra minor validation that yes, your fear of a centaur actually is true, because in 1976, a dude had the same suspicion. He went out and checked, and it was a goddamn centaur.
Son of a bitch.
Huge. He was 26 inches long.
Yeah, insane.
Insane.
That's not even
went to her brain.
Medically, like that's not safe.
No, you're not getting in.
No,
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's called a pelvic floor for a reason.
Yeah.
You don't go below the floor.
You don't.
It's not a pelvic basement.
Yeah.
The pelvic floor does not have a basement. It's just there, man.
And the word screen isn't, as I was reading it more, it wasn't, like the Zoom screen, the computer screen.
What were you hearing?
Like the smoke screen we put up, right?
Nice. Yeah. Sure.
There's many possibilities because you can't see. He's blinded by this jealousy, frankly, is what it is.
Yeah.
Jealousy and insecurity.
Yeah. The combo. I think it's like a 60-40, 70-30, or something like that.
Yeah. I'd love to talk with you off air about, what we think would happen after, the next page. I think that's what's the real strength of this is like you said, where he ends it. It's a great open. It's a great ending because it opens up. It's like, ooh, fuck. Who is going to be behind that door?
Yeah. Well, what's amazing is that I feel like we kind of do get the, if there were to be a real Bradley Hoof, he meets a real Bradley Hoof.
He meets five of them.
No, the dude with long hair.
Yeah.
Who bests him in his whatever, because he's meeting all these dudes who are older, more frail, more beta or whatever the word is than him.
Mm-hmm.
And the one dude yells to him when he goes, "You could never be Bradley," or something like that. Or he does his little thing. The one dude goes, "What are you getting out of this exchange?" Because he has to sort of run down this really long hall to leave the situation. Did it work?
If those things are actually even what was said.
Yeah. But I mean, that just definitely seems like something you would be saying to yourself in a very Fight Club-y way on the on the ride down and those 17 floors. But again, he can't even take the thing down. He has to walk down 17 floors. So yeah, maybe that is something he thinks about. Like, what do you, your brain is just asking you, what the fuck are you getting out of this? I'm trying to feel better about myself.
Yeah. How much of this is actually just his interior?
I mean, because he is by himself a lot. That is something to be said. He's by himself. He's going to the movies. I think that's where I got the main character thing, where he's constantly going to the movies and he's seeing the movie 2-3 times in a row because he's exhausted every film that you can see. He's being a just sort of a unproductive rust bucket.
Yeah, with his centaur Tyler Durden just needling him. Just needling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's true. I wonder if maybe he was more of the long-haired dude that he met in the beginning, and that dude's like, you ain't me anymore, buddy.
No.
You're not me. Yeah. And you never will be. He says something along those lines. I don't have it up.
He gets
him pretty fucking good.
Man, you couldn't be less Bradley Hoof if you tried.
Yeah, very good. You can be less Tyler Durden if you tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the story, and I read the interview that Josh Denslow did with Aaron Birch, and just to summarize it super quick, and I guess give Josh a plug, he's got a collection coming out next year, I think. Let me check the thing here. It's coming out. He says next year. And when was this story published?
This came out about a month ago.
So I don't
January
know.
January 23rd, 2024. Okay. You talking about Supernatural, his novel?
No, Supernormal just came out not long ago. But he's got a collection of short stories called Magic Can't Save Us. And there are stories with couples towards the beginning of the relationship, couples in the middle, and then tragically, of course, couples at the end. And this is part of one of them. So it's just all these stories about relationships. And I don't know if they're all magical, but it kind of seems like they are.
Why would you title it otherwise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Magic Can't Save Us.
That's
a good title for the collection, right?
Oh, it's fantastic, dude. That is one of the saddest realities about, like, maintaining a functioning, healthy romantic relationship, is that at some point you realize that it can't just be love, right?
No.
If you were to insert the word love with magic, yeah. like if you were to swap them out, you come to this like harsh reality like that gets you really far, but there's a just real rough acceptance you have to swallow. That's like, yeah, but it's not everything, and some of it, if you want it, is going to be shitty.
Yeah.
And you gotta just grin and bear it, figure it out.
Love is patient. You
know? Yeah.
Love is kind. Love is dressing up like a centaur and fucking your girlfriend.
Imagine if that's how it ends. That's and he rhymed it. Imagine if that's the ending. Like that in his head, that's what he was like, I gotta stop it here, because if I put that down, that's gonna be gonna fuck the whole thing.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
So,
oh man, I hope he listens to this and goes, gee, imagine if he emails you and he puts a re, you know, and he goes, re, infinite possibilities. You were right.
I'm sure he will listen, because what writer would not listen to the podcast that's talking about their work? Even if they're like, oh, I don't read the reviews. It's like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Nice and done. Yeah, no, I thought this was great. This was a little unnerving in how close it struck to getting that insecurity hit and then that dose of paranoia that follows. And whew.
Yeah, I think that's tough. I think that's pretty natural for anybody, not just men, although
that's true. I think I've only seen it, like I said, I've only seen it in the, and maybe that's because I'm a dude and that's what comes across my purview most often.
Yeah, but women get jealous and insecure.
They do.
Right?
They do.
I mean, humans in general,
yes.
We get insecure and jealous if we've got our thing and then something else comes along that is making, you know, this person that you care about and love feel a way that you feel like you can't anymore.
Yeah, for dudes in fiction anyway, it always seems to follow like a real rough self-esteem blow.
Yeah.
And sometimes with others, it's like, it seems like there's no direct correlation. It just like shows up.
Yeah, this is like fragile male ego, like big time. Right?
Big time.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you could certainly lean into that.
From a not toxic dude, I don't think this dude is like a toxic masculine.
No, and I
dude.
Think that's important to note, right?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing, too.
I mean, I guess
because those two go hand in hand, and you just go, ah, well, that makes sense. But this is just like a very, you know.
Is checking her search history, isn't that kind of toxic?
Yeah, I think there was a bing, and he just sort of opened it up to see what the message was. But that's, I mean, not to say that that's justified or cool, but
yeah.
I don't think he, you said hacking earlier. He wasn't Angelina Jolie in 1995.
Well, it's my girlfriend's computer dings across the room, blah, 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 blah. I cross to her computer and feel a pressure in my chest. I'm doing something I know is wrong. I shouldn't look, but I want to. I've never once invaded her privacy. This is the part that I read already, but what if this is the moment where I could skip future heartbreak? Blah, blah, blah. I sit down and move the mouse to turn on the monitor. And there it is, a message from Bradley Hoof. You ready?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's just sitting on the monitor. He didn't like put in a password or like.
Yeah.
But again,
it's fucked
up.
The screen was off.
The screen was off. Yeah, there was no reason. Like, no reason for it. Yeah, it's fucked up.
I mean.
Would we say toxic? We could say toxic.
Is that toxic?
I don't know if that's toxic.
I know. There's a lot of
people. I'm not sure I have a real good working definition of that. I just have a stereotype in my head of what that means.
And that changes probably daily. And there's a lot of probably, you know, I feel like I'm super leftist and very liberal. But I know that there's a whole a swath of folks that are so far more.
Oh,
left.
Yeah.
That even.
Yeah, they would fuck us up for 90% of what we said today.
Yeah.
It's the Patton Oswalt thing too, where he goes, the people who learn all the terms and know all the terms are the ones who for the most part are trying to use them nefariously. Like the Republican senators who say, remember, did you ever see that stand up?
Yeah.
And he does the Southern dude who's like, man, I don't give a fuck. If, you know, Bill's trying to fuck Bill or whatever like that, man. It's all right. You do your thing, man. Yeah. Just go fucking be fags together or something like that. He says stuff like that. That's not great.
But then
the other dude says something hyper liberal or uses hyper liberal terminology. I wish I had it memorized. And he's just saying real fucked up stuff.
Yeah.
And he's totally flipping it. But it sounds good, and it sounds like what you want to hear.
Hey, there is a subset of people that would say that he's absolutely toxic for just turning on the monitor, right?
Yeah. The second his finger touched the power.
Yeah, but is that actually? I don't know. Right. This is a whole different.
I love how we started. I love how we started this with you. Sort of being a Jar Jar Binks apologist, and then this is where we ended up.
I just don't want to offend anybody.
Yeah,
and I know that Star Wars fans are the most agreeable, so I just want to start with that. Right, I want to build up my support.
Oh my god, dude! Yeah, I'd be. Oh man.
My final thoughts is this is an awesome story, and I will absolutely message Josh later on. Like, hey. We talked about your story, and
well done, brother.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah, nicely done. Yeah, absolutely, totally appreciate it. Great pick. Moving forward, getting into the tunes, we have another new guy, 2024. It is
hip to the scene. Oldie,
an oldie, but he's coming back around. He's acknowledging that he hasn't been around for quite some time. Turn the Lights Back On by Billy Joel came out the first of this month. Now, I listen to this a ton. And it'll be hilarious if you disagree with this, but go right ahead. It is, to me, an obvious love letter to America. In a grand sort of gesture kind of way, which I thought was an interesting parallel. But I saw all of these interesting and very, very weirdly connective pieces lyrically to the story. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you why you picked it.
Because of the connection.
And for you, the connection was?
Well, it's about a relationship that has lost that spark, right?
Right.
So he's turning the lights back on, right? Hey, I know that I'm at fault here.
Right.
But here's the real reason I picked it. come on. Bill?
You just wanted to do Bill.
William? Come
you
on.
You
want
to bring Willie Joel back
When's
in?
When's the last time you get a new little BJ, you know?
Oh.
I'm sorry. Ooh, I mean a little B. Joel.
Whoa. Whoa, I thought you were going to then segue into like, and that could have saved the whole relationship and the goddamn story.
It
yeah, depends on who's going down who, I think, maybe.
Centaur.
Yeah, totally.
And it's not like this is a poor release. This is a surprising, a delight even, late career release.
The orchestral arrangement?
The fact that I think
loved it.
Stands up. I don't think it's,
yeah.
I don't think it's as good as his best, like greatest hits. But this if you got a double disc of some Billy Joel greatest hits, this
can
might
you
be
throw
end,
this on there.
This might be end of CD one, maybe top of CD two.
I was gonna say it's track 13, 14.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I really loved about this was from musically. So we're talking musically, right?
He's in top four. Oh, his voice so good.
Voice was great. When he does the little piano man nod,
mm-hmm.
right? He does a little bit of the solo from Piano Man. I'm correct, right? That's Piano Man.
I've listened to this so many times, and I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about, but I'm just nodding and agreeing.
So there's a portion of it where he does a throwback to one of his hits. I am like convinced it's Piano Man, but I think I said something on the last cast, and you were like, no, it's definitely this, and I was like, fuck, I thought it was this the whole time, so I didn't want to do that again. But in any case, I could have fixed that real easy by looking it up.
Yeah, I
was so convinced. But that was so awesome because in tying it into the story, I was like, wow, like, yes, we don't need him to go back and become the dude he was or that she fell in love with. Like, we need to evolve and continue to grow. But the little nod, the little hey, this dude's still here, right? Which I thought also was, what was he? Bradley Hoof number four or something like
yeah,
that
yeah.
With the long hair, like his, as you put it, Tyler Durden, that little nod to like who you were or who she fell in love with or the dude you imagined yourself to be even that she liked so much. And you get this little thing like Billy Joel going, yeah. And, you know, I was this dude once and you all loved me for this. I was the piano man, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm coming here with like, you know, I was a romantic. One of the lines is I was a romantic, right? I used to be romantic. Mm-hmm. And I would argue this is a pretty romantic song. So I don't know if he was being a little
tongue in cheek.
Yeah, a little bit. But it's also pretty straightforward too. And so that was, I just thought it's the lyrics are great. Yeah. Pacing these halls, trying to talk over the silence, and pride sticks out its tongue, laughs at the portrait that we've become. And then he has a fucking January 6th reference in there as well. Strangers in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude, it was great.
Are
so
you reading
that's what I thought.
Too much? You think that's a little double?
I think that's 100% what that was.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
I think that's just you're two strangers living together. You know.
Where
does he say strangers in the house?
Here, stuck on a hill, outsiders inside the home that we built.
Outsiders inside the home that we built.
Yeah.
Yeah, where does it say strangers in the house?
That's the line I was referencing. It's not strangers in the house. It's outsiders inside the home that we built.
Yeah,
the cold settles in.
You're putting a thing on
it. It's been a long winter of indifference. That's 100% a January 6th reference.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, buddy, this is a love letter to the United States.
This is why you're an English teacher,
right? And I think that's absolutely what he's got going on here. But the connection again to like the centaur, right? This mm-hmm. that outsider is inside the house because she's working from home. She's on the Zoom call. So these people that would be separated, like mm-hmm. An interaction that happens in an office somewhere, it's now in the house. And that makes it so much sort of like more egregious, it feels mm-hmm. like to him, you know, and stuff like that. I don't know. I thought the lyrics were great. And I love that he absolutely could read this song straight. And it's about a relationship that grew cold and flailed and failed and stuff like that. Or you could read it as this, you know, the relationship is him and and the US of A. I mean, you talk about the dude who wrote "We Didn't Start the Fire."
Yeah, same guy. Kid, you're right.
Same dude.
Yeah.
You know, he's got that vein in him.
Yeah, but it's also the same guy that wrote "She's Always a Woman."
It's also the same guy who did Oliver and Company. Like, there's a lot. He has within him multitudes, right?
Well, it's funny you should bring up his intention, because I've got Billy Joel on the horn right now, and I'm going to ask him.
imagine that. Like, we just did one with a dude that you're like semi-friendly with.
Yeah.
You get Billy Joel instead of the author who put out this short story. Oh man, that would have been
Bill.
That would have been gold.
Good Bill. Day. Bill.
Listen.
Is this about January 6th?
Absolutely. And
well, there you have it.
Give me a minute. I just wrap my goddamn car around a tree again. Fucking Long Island.
I don't know, man.
He's arguably famous for that as well. Come on.
I'm going to push back on that because we got stuck in a frame on it. Like, I don't know.
Dude, I don't know. It's all references to the White House.
Please open the door. Nothing is different. We've been, I don't know.
Ah, buddy. I don't know. I feel pretty strongly about that. I don't know that I'm reading into it too much.
Yeah,
If I am, I'll readily admit it. But
I think that
line...
It doesn't say strangers.
Outsiders inside the home we built. Stuck on a hill.
Yeah.
It's what the fuck? That's where the... It's on a hill, man.
Yeah. But then maybe you love me.
It's Capitol Hill. Capitol Hill. Yeah. I do wonder if, as you were alluding to before, he's reaching across the aisle a little bit.
But who's the I?
Good citizen, mm-hmm. right? The good citizen, the one who is critical of our failings but also loves us, right? Us being the United States. And you know, I think that the thing that he's seeing is that people are just being one or the other, and that you can't be both and still want it to succeed. Right, these people that wanted to tear it down and destroy it and stuff like that. He's saying let's not start a fucking fire. The people that don't want to burn it to the ground, that's who the I are.
I just can't reconcile the I. Who is the I and then the you? Because we've got them back to back, right? So
well,
I don't really.
At the end of the day, I think we have to keep in mind that he is a love song. Presenting as a love song. Yeah, you know what I mean? And I think when he references that I was a romantic, or I was more romantic, I forget what he fucking says. There's no way I can read, "Here stuck on a hill, outsiders inside the home that we built, the cold settles in, it's been a long winter of indifference, and maybe you love me, maybe you don't, maybe you'll learn to, and maybe you won't." It just is like these factions in the country, and he's I think aligning himself, it seems to be, with the more liberal side of it, because that's kind of where, I don't know, in my sort of like limited knowledge of him, he kind of was. I'm not sure that he saw him as a political person or an activist or anything like that, but I think, you know, he did make clear what he thought.
I'll let you have it. I'm not going to take it from you. If this is,
I mean, it's gonna in the next however long, it's gonna very clearly come out. You know, if that's the case or not, I'm sure it's just a brand new tune.
Yeah, that can be your Bradley Hoof. All right? That can be what the song's about outside the screen. All right.
You know what? We're obviously gonna have to get some confirmation at some point, because if it's not, I'm going to be bewildered and really start to, that'll be the shot to my self-esteem, and I'm going to be looking for a fucking Bradley Hoof or something like that. Is Dan, you got another cast elsewhere? What the fuck? Are there smarter people than me? Jesus.
No, I'm not saying you're not smart or that that's not a valid interpretation, wild as it may be.
I don't think it's wild, though. I just don't think it's that fucking wild.
I think it's just a beautiful love song. And all good
to America.
And no. Oh, that'd be so disappointing if it was a love song to America.
I think it kind of is, man. Ugh. I think he's like, hey, you know, I was away.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, that's why the country faltered, because Billy Joel didn't release an album since 1993.
I don't think it's him, though. That's the thing. And you're right to question that, because that is the thing that ties it together and makes it a strong thesis or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the I? Who's the you?
Yeah. And I get it. Yeah. Points of view shift, right? They certainly do in songs.
Yeah.
Right. Who was the speaker of this verse? Who was the speaker of that verse? Right. And you know, we just didn't have a Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow to go back and forth. You know? So we knew it's just Billy. You know, that's all we.
Yeah,
got.
It's just Billy. It's just Billy. He's taking on a lot.
Yeah.
It is. It is a wonderful track.
Right.
It is great.
Pleasant, right?
Dude, I was amazed at how many times, because I let it go, so I could like get in it. I was amazed at how many times I cycled that puppy. It was a lot.
Well, it's a short song too, which is does he know how to write them?
Yeah.
That is a. I'll tell you what this ain't.
I didn't even realize that it cycled the first few times.
Oh, what was the song? Like 2 minutes?
I got
a timestamp. Three. It's like, it's almost 4 minutes long. It's like a 4 minute long song.
3:58.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. What a, you know what? It's just so nice to just have a good old love song by William Martin Joel on the airwaves again.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. His voice in your head, it does bring you back. I mean, I've referenced Oliver, but that was a big thing, because that just put all of his songs back on the radio. Yeah. I remember being a kid and being that was a long period of time that he dominated the airwaves. I mean, dude, if you're able to sell out Madison Square Garden as like a monthly residency, that's bananas to me.
He did that
he was able to do that
for years,
for as long as he did.
How long was that? Because he was like, I'm going to do it and keep venue, this until it stops selling out.
And it just
it was like
10
years later.
Yeah, dude, it just wouldn't. And the fact that it wasn't Vegas, that he could just take the train in.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's crazy to me, especially knowing sort of like how expensive that fucking place is. And like, dear God, like that's your Villa Pianos.
Dude, Billy Joel and Madison Square Garden Entertainment announced on Thursday, this just came out last year, that the singer will end his record-breaking residency at the iconic New York venue in July of 2024 after 10 years and some 150 concerts.
God,
it would never
that's
end.
Crazy
if he didn't say hey. okay it would never end.
Do you think there's got to be, and that's the thing that's bananas too, is there's a lot of people that probably are like, I've seen him 150 times, I'd do it 150 more. And like that went every time. They're like, this is our month, this is what we do.
Yeah,
this is our monthly thing.
Rich people. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. Oh dude, the wealth on Long Island is out of control.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
There's people that probably have like season passes. They're like, I'll skip tonight. I'm not going to go to see Billy Joel this month. We'll see him next month.
We'll see him next month.
We saw him 3 weeks ago. We'll skip next week.
Yeah, I think he's only swapping out the encore.
Yeah, I think the Obamas are going to come over for dinner.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, it is. Ooh, it is. It's
can
like...
we bump the Obamas?
For Billy?
You know someone's bumping the Obamas for Billy Joel.
Dude, that is crazy. I actually am having a lot of trouble right now, because I remember seeing Bruce and the E Street Band at Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. and thinking like, and he did like a long, it was a bunch of shows. Might have been like 5 or 7 shows. And I remember thinking, wow, this was all sold out for this dude. And it was packed. And you know, he always posted those, the house lights up, you look around, packed. 150 times, mm-hmm. consistently,
yeah.
and you don't have any new material?
No.
There's nothing new.
No.
This is the first new thing.
That's it.
Imagine when he plays this.
It's Billy fucking Joel, baby.
Oh, man, that's wild. That really is wild.
I
got to
get one of those tickets. I didn't realize that it's over in like 4 months.
It's over. I know. Jesus, what they're going to be now.
Dude, let's rent centaurs and go.
Yeah, we'll just ride them in.
Yeah.
flapping dong.
Well, listen. Listen, if that's what you want your centaur to be doing.
It's unavoidable. What do you mean?
Where is
that's
the
how
dong?
You get the, that's how you clear the space.
Is the dong like where it is on a horse or
I
like
would
in
imagine.
The front?
No, it's got to be. What?
Like where a man's
it's gotta
would
be. Like, no. Oh, I didn't even think of that.
If I was a
no.
centaur, I'd want it in the front. So I can shake.
Just clear a path. Oh, God. Yeah, I don't know what more to say about this tune. I think it is interesting. You mentioned like a lot of these dudes coming back, you know, a lot of this revivalist stuff yeah. that's happening. And I like that, like, this really, it didn't lose the expectation, the feel, like all the stuff that you thought would be in the song is in the song. And then, you know, it just has this overlaying of sort of a political note.
Hey, sure. Give me your top five late career releases.
Okay.
Or top three if, you know, five might be a tall order.
Yeah, five is a tall order. All right. Late career releases. Goodness.
I've got mine if you want me to go first.
Yeah, you go.
I thought of my answer before I made the question. That way I could appear to be smarter and more prepared.
Holy Jesus. Yeah, that was... Now I know how you feel. That's crazy. Yeah. That's a...
Leonard,
go for it.
Leonard Cohen, You Want It Darker, his last album.
That's good.
David Bowie's last album.
Fuck you. That was going to be mine.
It still can.
All right.
It still can.
Yeah.
And... That's it. But as far as good ones, the Stones, surprisingly, that last album they put out back in the fall was actually top-notch.
Yeah.
It's as good as any Stones album, like a couple of great tracks, and the rest is just, this is good. This sounds all right. It's fine. This song by Billy Joel, surprising.
Yeah. I was very surprised. Yeah, I was extremely surprised. So I'm gonna say Bowie's Black Star as well. I'm also gonna say Hum.
H-U-M.
If you're from yeah. Hum's Inlet came out in 2020. You'd Prefer an Astronaut was their 1995 release that like you know, that was the one that everybody liked. Mm-hmm. Had the song Stars on it. Mm-hmm. She was out back counting stars. Right. So those are my two first ones. And then I'm going to have to say late album release.
Late career. Yeah.
Late career release. That was really stunning.
I've got a couple more. I'm going to throw them out to Purple Mountains. That was a David Berman project that he did and then tragically ended his life, like right before the tour.
Oh, buddy.
About 15 years ago, Paul McCartney released an album with a group he formed called The Firemen. I'm almost certain that's what it's called.
Oh, really?
That was gnarly.
I don't know. I thought ZZ Top had a later album, but it was like still in their like... Their prime was so long, so it was still in there. In any case, yeah, those would be
late career releases. And Billy Joel is I'm really happy that he's adding to that to the canon of solid late career because you never see
dude,
it. You don't
I
see
know
it
I'm
often.
Think of so many. I yeah, dude, and I know I'm gonna think of so many.
Well,
so
we'll
annoying.
Put it on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so our beer. This will be a quick segment. We're drinking the Victory Tasty Cake Coffee Cake Ale, 6%. This is beer that is billed as locally brewed, locally baked. This very tasty collaboration between Victory Brewing Company and Tasty Cake puts the delicious flavors of Tasty Cake Coffee Cake into a sweet ale with notes of pound cake and cinnamon.
Oh, my God. That sounds so fucking good.
It's good for one. It's not as okay. It's not as cloying or syrupy as like you'd maybe think. A lot of these things,
like a French toast. What's that?
Yeah,
one that makes the French toast.
Right?
Yeah, man. That was rough.
they brew these things, but they're really like malt beverages, which is
okay,
like syrup with a bunch of sugar and alcohol. Like that's they're pretty yeah. gross, you know. This actually yeah. is like a coffee cake ale.
Wow,
but it is
that's amazing that they
it
can
is
do
a
that.
Touch sweet.
I believe it. Yeah,
but it's nice.
Is it the yeah, I was gonna say, is it like the syrupy sort of tone and note that makes it sweet?
It smells like maple syrup, but it does yeah. not taste like it. It smells way more powerful than it is on the tongue.
I see.
Cool. That's the marquee beer, and it's good. You should get it because it's, you know, we got to support local stuff, right? Even local,
absolutely
bigger things like Victory and Tasty Cake. But that's yeah. that's our fabric.
Yeah, man. I always think back to going to Westchester, which is right by Downingtown where Victory's from. They would like try out beers in the town, in all the bars where, like, you know, the students went and stuff like that. I remember when Hop Wallop came out. I remember when Hop Devil came out, be a tiny pitcher for 99 cents. And you know, that was cool. It like linked you to it. And I really liked that they like, you know, we're obviously trying to hawk some beer, but also just like sort of connecting the immediate community mm-hmm. with what they were up to, man. That's sweet. I like Victory. I've always liked Victory.
Yeah, they do good stuff. Good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're huge now.
All right.
It's crazy.
I think I have a rating system.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Sure. I give infinite possibilities outside the screen by Josh Denslow. I give that 5 out of 5 sirens calling you from the rock.
Nice.
I give William Martin Joel's Turn the Lights Back On 5 out of 5 sirens calling you from the rock. I guess if you follow the sirens, that's your doom, your destruction.
Yeah, you're done.
Well, no, you're done because you're just devastated. It's the art. It's art that just destroys you.
Oh, broke me.
In the best possible way. I fucking hate that.
It broke me in the best possible way.
Oh, I hate that. Can we stop saying that about this?
I haven't heard it in a while, actually.
I heard it again
might be
the other
on its
day.
Way out. Ah,
I was
Jesus.
Like, Jesus Christ, that's enough. That is the weakest shit. Just say you don't have an original thought about this thing. All right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or come up with one, even if it's lame.
Yeah, right. And I give this Tasty Cake Coffee Cake Ale 6% Victory, locally brewed, locally baked. I'm gonna give it 4 out of 5 sirens calling you from the rock, if you're only having the one.
Nice. I will give Infinite Possibilities Outside the Screen by Josh Denslow, found on Short Story Long, a 4.5 out of 5 sirens calling you from the rock. I will give Billy Joel's latest offering, Turn the Lights Back On, also a 4.5 out of 5 sirens calling you from the rock. And I will just echo what you said because I trust your judgment. And due to recent illness, I don't think I have the microbes left in my belly to stomach a beer. So I'm just going to co-sign what you said with a 4 out of 5 sirens calling you from the rock for that tasty new Victory Tasty Cake collab.
Locally brewed, locally baked.
Locally baked. And big nod to the hot goss. Really glad you remembered that. Hot goss.
Hot goss.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for this collection. I thought it was a wonderfully curated cast. Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
I am psyched to see if I was right.
You weren't, but we'll find out.
Yeah. Oh, man, it'd be so funny if he just, like, gets asked that in an interview and he's like, the fuck are you talking about?
Love.
Who?
Love.
Who
no.
read into that?
Eric, put on the Billy Joel song.
Enjoy.
Get back to us.
Yeah. All Can't right. wait to hear your opinion, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.